Good evening, everyone. Thank you. We're going to, my name's Dwayne Sims, as you all know. Today is
27.
September 27th. This is our first board meeting for the start of the new school year. And of course, before we, as we call to order, it is now, 6:05 p.m. Is that accurate? Excellent, so we'll call to order. And as a result, we'll begin our roll call and we'll start on the far left here.
Courtney Fox.
Michael Riley.
Sarah Grant.
Courtney Lockney.
Sarah Nagel.
Angela Angini.
Dwayne Sims.
Megan Newberry.
Janine Salomon.
Jed Donaghy.
Kiara Pulebeck.
C. Allenson.
Excellent, thank you very much. We have and we have a few regrets as well, which I know we've noted. Thank you, Megan. Welcome back, everyone. I know, hopefully we've all had a great summer. That's hopeful. I know it's been pretty active summer for pretty much everyone, probably both on the professional and personal fronts, as well as educationally. I want to personally, obviously, welcome you back and say that it's very, very, very nice to see you all here. Hope you all had a great summer, productive summer, and now we're obviously back to the business like we never left. we'll jump into right into our agenda. We have a pretty tight agenda today in terms of short. Public comment, as we normally kick off, we have 3 minutes per speaker allocated. However, I don't believe we have any public speakers noted today. Before I say that, I'd be remiss. We have several guests here, and I would just like to welcome each of you as well, and thank you very much for coming. I'd be remiss if I did not do that. However, I do believe neither of you has signed up for a public comment. Is that accurate? It is. And I don't believe we've received any, Ms. Secretary, through any of the email or any other additional requests. Is
correct.
That correct?
That's
excellent.
Correct.
All right. So we'll move right through. No public comment recorded for today's session. Next segment on the agenda is going to be the approval of our July 26th meeting public board minutes. I trust that you all have reviewed it. I know there's iteration in front of you all in your packets for today. I'll allow for obviously just a minute or so for just to review it now in case you see any questions, comments, concerns, additions, and or omissions. Yes.
One thing on the second page, after the head of school report,
yes.
that paragraph, it looks to me like the second sentence, there may be a word missing at the end. It said it was suggested the documents be considered a living something. So I think we dropped a word there.
Excellent.
Not quite sure that. What that is, but.
Just take A.
Yeah. Or considered living, okay.
Excellent.
Sorry.
Megan, you have that recorded? Excellent. Thank you very much, Janine. Appreciate that. Anything else that anyone might have caught as well? Excellent. No questions, concerns, comments. May I hear a motion to have these minutes approved from the July 26th public board session?
Move.
Janine Salomon, move. Second?
Second.
Jed Donahue, seconded. Any objections, abstentions, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, so moved. Thank you very much. And my fly friend continues. Committee report. So we have one specific for this board session meeting today, and that'll be our committee report on finance from our treasurer, Mr. Zeke Allenson.
Yes,
Zeke, pleasure to see you, my friend, as always.
So last time we were here in July, we discussed how the fiscal year ended up on June 30th, which was positive, and we also adopted a preliminary budget for fiscal 19, which we entered on July 1st. That budget is about $8.3 million in projected revenues and about $7.9 million in projected expenses with about a $230,000 carryover at the end of the year. Since then, of course, we didn't meet last month, so we have two months worth of budget reporting to review today. The first one is for the month of July, and that was in the main packets that were circulated to you, and then the next one's for August, which came, I think, this morning. The first, August, July was the first month, or 8.3% of the year. We got in, the state preloads our budget with, I think, 75% of what they anticipate we're going to get, and they do that very early in the month so that we don't have cash flow issues. We also, you know, we'll be getting our local school district funds, but those bills have just recently gone out, so we haven't gotten any of that money yet. But anyway, we did get like $3.6 million in July. The one notable item is an encumbrance of about $200,000 in the other expenses line, and I'm gonna ask Courtney if she can fill us in. Is that the one-time startup of machinery and equipment, or is that something else?
No, you have to get the encumbrance under other was renovations.
Okay, the renovations. So as you all know, this line called other expenses has about $796,000 in it. That is renovations money that we anticipate spending this year on the building next door. So that $200,000 encumbrance was for bills associated with that were...
Yeah, just to clarify, that's not on new renovations, that's on the renovations that happened last year that we paid out the bills in July and August and September. So all of the final billing is now done and paid, so that number is already accounted for.
So and GGA is very happy with us. Indeed, our construction company.
So, and I don't know if it happened in July or in August, but we ended up also paying a utility bill that was a last year's water, I think, that had fallen behind.
It wasn't necessarily that we fell behind. There were some questions around the bill that we were holding on to it to wait until we clarified some pieces, and then it was held until we got some final answers, and then we were able to pay that off.
So that line is, as we'll see when we get to August, is running a little bit higher than we had anticipated. I think the two big things to note are that when we ended fiscal 18, we had a carryover of, let's see, let me just double check this figure here. It was about $800,000. And what we're projecting for this year is about $230,000. So as we've mentioned before, we are deficit spending, which means that, you know, we're spending more than we're taking in. Luckily, we have like $1 million in the bank from which that deficit spending is being taken. So we're not having to borrow at this point, although we are in discussions with various potential financing entities about raising money, but that's not really a budget item.
And when Zeke says luckily, he means strategically, because the Finance Committee did do work over the past 5 years to make sure that we were in a place where we were ready to do the renovations for this year. So yes, there was a pocket that had been set aside and put aside and raised for that and held until this year to be able to spend on that.
Yeah, the challenge is going to be, well, not the challenge, but our anticipation is that money that we're going to spend down is going to come back. That's what our projection shows. So once this construction project is done, based on the additional kids that are enrolled and the revenues that will be generated from that, you know, we should be able to replenish the the cushion that, you know, was provided for us by the founding board, the pre-founding board, I don't really know what you call it, that, you know, was there since the beginning through the fundraising that they had done. And obviously, we want to get to the point where we, you know, we benefited from their work and we're able to do this expansion. We want to try to get the money back so that we can do something else.
I know, just if I may, Zeke, I know just for additional context, those, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but those expenses, the difference, primarily the difference anyway, between last year's carryover and what we're projecting for this year, are those one-time capital expenses associated with the expansion, again, you know, from the surplus that we've carried year over year leading into this year, that have put us in position to actually really absorb those one-time capital expenditures related to our expansion. By the way, I look at that, and I would presume many of you do as well, as a capital expenditure from an investment standpoint to put us in position for our future growth and obviously the revenues that come with that growth as well, all right? So that's exactly what Zeke is referring to when he's talking about offsets down the line. And additionally, though, I think, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, that does not, obviously, as we all know, absolve us from our responsibility to fundraise. And I know there's a lot of conversation around that. This being our fifth year in particular, we have a wonderful opportunity in front of us to tell our story about the work that has been going on here over the last 5 years and obviously where we plan on taking that next year with eighth grade, so on and so forth. So I just wanted to provide some additional clarification and context around that, not only for what the expenditure was, but where we're going in the future as well.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Zeke, can I
yes.
just ask one question?
Sure.
Just clarification. So at projected now at the end of our fiscal year that we're in right now, 2019, we will still have what we've called and referred to as a surplus of about 200,000.
230, right?
230.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we still have the 2% contingency and our $25,000 operating contingency, correct?
That is correct.
So I just want to make sure I'm counting all the buckets of money.
Yeah. And we will also be putting, we'll talk about it in a minute, I think it's 170,000 more into our summer reserves.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Which are now at almost $800,000, but when we
right.
get to next June, we'll be putting in, you know, another 170, which should be in an excess amount that floats through our salaries line all the way to the end of the year, and then
Got
we'll
it.
Move.
Okay.
A couple of small items have occurred in July that were positive that we weren't really counting on to the tune of about $41,000. We got $31,000 extra dollars from the state for minor capital improvements through a legislative initiative. I don't know whether it's temporary or permanent, but we did get slightly more for minor cap. The total amount that we had budgeted was $50,000 for minor cap. And then another $10,000 for federal funds that we hadn't anticipated getting. So those are two small adjustments that occurred. We realized at the start of the year, as we normally do, that special ed costs are unpredictable, and those may increase as we get through identifying children who have special needs. As you all know, the September 30th unit count is coming up in a couple of days. That's the day when the state counts the number of kids that we have in the school and determines, based on their regular or special ed classification, how much money they're going to give us. Obviously, if kids have special needs, they give us a little bit more. There are a bunch of gradations to that. Anyway, And then the last thing that happened in July that was sort of unanticipated, and Courtney, you're gonna have to help me with this one, is that once they started running all of the equipment in that building next door for the first time and put, you know, 100% stress on many of those systems that hadn't been operated at 100% in many years, some things broke. And so we incurred some one-time equipment and repair expenses on the heating, you know, ventilation and cooling over there. It's not something we're particularly concerned about, and we don't expect it to be a recurring issue. Are there any questions on July before I move to August? So, the budget that we had put together was based on 560 kids, which is actually misrepresented on one of our reports. It says 562. I think we determined last night that that's probably a good, valid figure, and it's not going to change unless there's some sort of a surprise between now and September 30th, like some kid enrolls in a school that we weren't counting on, or some kid leaves. August, the end of August, represented 16 and two-thirds percent of the school's fiscal year. But because August is a three-pay month, it represents 19% of the salary and other employment costs expenditure that we're anticipating for the school year. So we identified a couple of items that we're going to add to our reserves again. We're going to add, we're budgeted to add another $25,000 to our reserve, like we've tried to do each year, in case there's equipment or renovation issues that we have to deal with. I should say repair. These aren't renovation issues. Those are the capital campaign. I mean, if something breaks. And another $140,000, I think I said $170 a moment ago, it's $140,000 for the summer reserve. We had the opportunity to acquire some additional parking leases that we didn't realize we were going to get, so we jumped on that. The billing for the local school districts apparently just went out. This is something that's done for us by the Department of Education. We're supposed to get in from the local districts 35% of their obligation in the next couple of weeks, and the balance comes in December. There haven't been any per pupil funding declines from any of the big four districts that we draw from. Our two primary districts we draw from are Red Clay and Brandywine. There were slight increases in the per pupil amount that we're going to get from them. Christina had a larger increase, but apparently our census from them is the lowest, so it doesn't have that much of an impact on us. But we budgeted an anticipation of like $2.4 million in local funds, and the trend is looking like, maybe $2.5 million. I mean, it's it's not that big a deal. It's probably less than $50,000 that we're talking about, but it's an upswing, which is good. Every time there's an upswing, an unanticipated upswing, as opposed to an unplanned for expense, obviously that's good. The amount of state money that we're going to get is still subject to adjustment for the September 30th unit count, and also the credentialing that our staff cadre has had you know, changes in since last year, either people earning additional degrees, well, I guess that's primarily it, and that will entitle us to some additional state funding, although we don't know what that figure is at this point.
Just a question on the teachers as well, and certification. What's the end date, final date that that's required to be in the system?
I believe it's December 31st, okay. Retro, but
okay.
We're on track.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So we seem to be one-to-one now as a particular.
Yeah, and at this time of the year, the tricky part is you're getting verification of business employment and things like that that have to be then approved through the state. So the quicker things get turned around from people's previous employers and their years in, the quicker we can process it and update it.
Okay.
So it's all in process.
In process. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Zeke.
Yep. Court, you're going to have to help me on this. We've got about $170,000 of encumbrances that we're showing for August. There's $77,000 on facilities lease. Was that the first rent payment?
Yes.
Yeah. $44,000 for transportation, contracts for the buses.
Yep, that's our monthly contract.
Buildings, maintenance, and custodial for $7,100. And other expenses of $42,000, of which apparently $34,000 is additional renovation funds. Not certain what the difference of $10,000 is.
Yeah, they were all renovation, just different bills. They're just bills in that for the total, same total.
So that is, in a nutshell, where we stand. If there are questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. Otherwise, we're off to a good start. Not looking as flush as we have in past years, but not looking like we're going to run into any kind of a serious problem either.
Just one request, Zeke. As we're starting to do the spend now for the draw down the reserve that had been set aside, is it possible to add like an extra sheet in the monthly spreadsheet just showing that progression? Would that be something that could be easily pulled together, or just to keep track of that as kind of a standalone item?
So on the monthly report spreadsheet, which is the one that gets posted on our website, that's a state. That's a state
standard
report that we can't really change.
So I meant for just our internal management here at the board.
So internally, we can certainly break it out in whatever way is most convenient. The renovations do have their own line on this cash flow report, although this isn't really the easiest report to read as far as I'm concerned, but. There is a separate line for renovations in it, but maybe the best thing, I'm trying to think of how the best way to show this would be, and maybe the best way, I know that we've already got like a brochure that shows what some of the things we've done in our renovations have been over the past like 3 years. I think we're in phase, are we in phase three now? Entering phase three?
I'm trying to think of how we could do that, Mike. So we have the prior year surplus, right? If we take the prior year surplus and track it next to the renovations paid out this year, the bottom line is that 250 that we carry over, right? So that means that's the short answer?
Right, I understand that intuitively.
How would that look like?
Well, I don't know. It could be in the narrative. It could just be another section, like just showing that reserve less, like this is how we're progressing to that goal.
Yeah.
Because this spreadsheet is not easy to orient yourself
around. But there's two different issues. There's the annual amount we plan to spend this year for the renovations, and then there's the additional amount we're going to spend the following year and years out. I mean, my understanding is that we have at least one more phase after this year's phase that's, on the horizon. So I just want to make sure that we're clear what we're showing. If we're just showing this year, that's fine, but I think we need to also be thinking big picture about what we're planning to spend for 2020 as well, and how much that is and where that's coming from as well.
I mean, we're kind of at the end point of this one, like we're not spending down anymore. We're at the end of that one. So it's not like every month we'll come with a new number. That renovation is done and paid, and the reserve is brought down to what it is now. So there there won't be a continuation of that until we get to a point where we go, okay, now we're back in. Here's our bucket again, and here's what we're going to bring down. And I think when we get to that point, it would make sense to do that breakdown again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, then that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that's the money we need to be focused on going forward. This money has been spent and moved accordingly where it needs to be moved to pay the various vendors and things. So.
The monthly operational expenses, we have an obligation for me to understand how we're tracking against budget, but there is that bigger next phase of growth and
well, that's a good point.
I don't know how you present it, but it's at least for me. If you could think about a way of presenting it, that it's very much more evident, and that we can keep it in front of us, so we know what the goal is, as well as in terms of what we have as the way of reserves, as well as what we need to start building up to for that next phase.
And I don't think it exists yet. Okay. I think it would be a zero right now in terms of what we're building out to then be able to do those next renovations. So I don't think that there is any other funding at this point earmarked for those projects.
Okay.
I think that we'll get to a place where we feel like there's an ability to move some of that over and to earmark it for those future projects. But I would think that right now it looks like a zero that we're now waiting to fund. Does that make sense? No,
we can take it offline. I don't want to tie any more time here.
He wants a projection. Yeah. I think what I'm hearing.
That's why I was saying it's two different buckets. It's how much we've moved this year that is going to be spent throughout this year. Whether it's already all been spent, I'm not sure. I think that's a different question than the going forward money. And I think the entire board should have an idea and comprehension of what we've spent and what we haven't. And we do have some new board members. So I just think that's all we need to do is to present some material.
I think that's good. And I think to your point, Mike, I think one of the things that really is occurring to me is that we've sort of got our operational expenditures and our one-time expenditures combined into one budget.
And
that is not the best way to do it. So that's a very good point. I'll talk with Courtney, we'll talk with Karen,
We could also bring the five-year, which then shows which numbers change pretty clearly, right? So the renovation number, that's one big number this year, is not that number next year, so you can see kind of naturally built in. So we could look at that too.
We'll figure something out there.
And even on that,
something for you by next month.
Even on that five-year, I think it's worth taking that same model approach as an add-on.
Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions around July or August reporting package for Zeke?
None for me. Just need a motion. I'd make a motion to, or someone would need to make a motion to approve these reports for July and August so that we can post the monthly web report on our website.
So may we hear a motion for both reports? We're talking the July 2018 narrative as well as the August 2018 to be posted accordingly.
So moved.
Mike Riley with the motion. And do we hear a second?
Second.
Janine Salamone, second. Any objection? That moves us along into our next bullet point here for our head of school report. A couple of bullet points there, and I'll turn it over to Courtney Fox. Thank you, Courtney.
So I have that overall kind of update around staffing and student services around the all one of these. So it's the updated list of all of the current staff on one side, and an updated list of the enrollment for this year and what that 560 number looks like. So I'll let those kind of come around, and then if there's anything on that, but I think that. One of the things that you will see on it is at the bottom it has the enrollment history and our future approved enrollment total, so you can see where we are in alignment with that as well. So sort of the current and then the trajectory of where we're at. I'll give you a second to digest, and then if anybody has any questions, I'll come back to you.
Courtney, do we have a maximum number of students for these two buildings that we can have, and is this number close to it?
So this number is what our charter is approved for.
Okay.
I don't have that maximum.
Right, so
it's what we're approved for.
What we're approved for, for the charter, okay.
Yeah, and at the bottom it shows the approval numbers. And we are allowed a 5% increase or decrease without any questions. Beyond that, we would have to go for a modification to our enrollment numbers. So as long as we stay within that window, we're fine.
Okay. Oh, is that why the 7th, 8th grade is 67 filled with 64 open? Is that what happened there?
We ended up having a few more kids than we thought that ended up staying. We assumed there would be some
attrition
of people going to their feeder middle schools. So we had made an assumption when we did our charter application of what that would look like, and we had more kids actually stay than we thought would at that middle school level. Just by a few.
That's great.
Yeah.
Again, we were doing that math out. You talked about a year and a half ago when we mapped out where we thought our kids would be. So it was we're actually pretty close.
Courtney,
and at that level, you can have a few more.
Do we have a sense moving forward now that we've expanded to eighth grade that although we have hope that kids are going to stay, do we have any sense of that our numbers are going to change, that our attrition will go down? And I mean, is that what our thought is, that
based on
this projection, that's what it looks like to me?
Based on this projection, again, it's still some small cohorts to make some judgments on. I mean, the idea and I think one of the primary reasons we did the expansion was because our families said, if you're here till eighth grade, we'll stay for middle school. You're still, I think, always going to have some attrition at that grade level, either kids going to specialized middle schools or, going back to a feeder school or some different things. It's always going to be a place where we see a change in our numbers, but I would absolutely anticipate that going down, and the buzz around middle school around here is really, really positive for our younger kids. And we have created a transition plan for our sixth graders to really help them want to be here and stay here. So there's a whole transition plan around social, academic, and some other areas, even logistics for them, around wanting to kind of keep them here. So we've kind of made sure that they have a pretty strategic plan to do that.
I can tell you the talk of the town amongst the sixth graders is our lockers. And how excited they are to be utilizing and have access to lockers. And so that's
most
been,
of the 4.5-6s have lockers.
That's right.
And I say most. Anything else on staffing or enrollment? The other one that I'm going to send around, just so you have it, is our monitoring calendar from DOE. Just again, a document that y'all should have in your binder so you can see all of the audits that are going on over the course of the year. This is actually probably our lightest year on on-site audits. Yes, you see me doing a happy dance. it's a lot of desk audits this year, so a lot of online and desk audits, but not as many on-site this year, which is nice because they are pretty intense.
Courtney, can you jump back to this really quick?
Yes.
Is there, I know it's kind of far away, approved for 650, are you thinking about space?
So the 650 we are accounted for and planned for in terms of our space, it will require some renovation still. That's what that next phase is for, is to accommodate the middle schools that will need updated space planning.
Mm-hmm.
The way that floor is mapped out now does not work for them, but we have enough. That accommodates all of the classrooms in this building, and we have two additional classrooms in that building that are ready for the additional 4, 5, 6 students that we'll have. So the only real configuration that we really have to work through is the middle school.
So it's really not adding any more lower school?
No.
Yeah.
They all stay.
It's just assuming that they're filling. I gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
And while we're on that, Courtney, could you also speak a little bit to the special education and nursing personnel add related personnel who are listed here and sort of give us a sense of, you know, sort of who's new and how we've been able to bolster services through staffing in that area.
In terms of kind of the special ed team, and I'm going to focus on the student support team in a few minutes, but in terms of the special ed team, all of those are returning teachers. The educational diagnostician is returning, the psychologist, the speech are all returning. And I'm going to introduce student services, student support in just a few minutes. Okay. They are the new staff. And we have one new nurse, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty stable cohort of special ed teachers.
I have a question about, as we do increase in our numbers, in terms of transportation, I've heard some comments from parents about other bus routes. I know we have like 10 buses, like crazy amount of buses now. But in serving this area, are any more bus routes being considered?
So as we need, they're all based on capacity. So the amount of buses that we have and the routes are all based on capacity. If there are children here that need buses, we provide busing for them. There are some parameters around the routes that we create to make them make sense for safety and to make sense for timeliness and all of those great things. So there's absolutely, as we have more kids that need buses, there will be more buses.
Thank you.
And probably more staff.
Going back to Courtney, if I can, and Zeke, I think this all ties into the comment assessment here around the last stage classroom configurations. So as we look at that 5 year and for Mike's request as well, that breakout, timeliness, right? So what's the time frame? I think maybe we can include, not necessarily an exact, but what that looks like, right? So and try to meld those two together, mm-hmm. just to present a more holistic picture, right, around not only the money that we're using and where it's going, but looking forward when we'll need it, right, to accommodate the 650 number as well and where that's coming from. So it's something, again, as we get with Karen as a finance committee, and I think we want to make sure that we zero down on, and zero in on that.
In a nutshell, we've been able to do some renovations this year to make the middle school
doable
for this year. Right? So we took down a wall and put in some lockers in middle school this year. Next year, again, we've got to make a third classroom, and the classrooms at that level hold about 30 kids, so they're not doable in the spaces that we have. So we're going to need to take down a wall or reconfigure something again. After that, we add a fourth middle school classroom, and at that point, the whole floor will need some type of major reconfiguration. So I think that we can get through one more year, and then we'll need to make sure that we have that next year is another year for another semi-major renovation on that floor, that next phase that we're planning for.
Okay. And that seems to tie back and be consistent with, I know for those who were here may remember, and those who were not able to attend last 2 months ago session, GGA's presentation around having some excess funds left over to have reallocated to some of the renovations that we were really targeting for phase three and being able to get that done in phase two. Is that consistent with what you're talking about?
Yeah, and it bought us some more time to be able to be ready for a full rollout.
Wonderful. Yep. Okay, just want to make sure I'm connecting the dots. Yes, please, Andrew. Thank you.
Just before we leave the topic of your question around buses and for clarity too, and just for context for everybody in the board too, while your answer to the question was fantastic because it serves our families, can you also clarify though that is a service that we provide, what the law actually says, so that everybody is aware of it and able to address it when we are being asked questions about it?
Regulation states that we provide busing to the students who live within the district that our school resides in. Mm-hmm. FSMA has always gone above and beyond that and provided busing outside of our district. So we reside within the Christina School District, which means we're responsible for providing busing to students that live within the Christina School District. And again, it is common practice in some charter schools to go above and beyond that. It's something that we've always done, to say it's okay if you live outside of this. We still want to make sure that we are providing a service for our families to be able to get here in the best way. The impact on going much farther outside of the Christina School District is different than on a typical district transportation and buses. So in a district, when you're buses are only traveling a few miles, if someone's late and another bus needs to come, that bus is only a mile or two away. Or if there's traffic, you can typically get around it and be a few minutes late. When your buses are traveling 20 miles and coming from places that are 20 miles away because they have, you know, routes all over the state, the impact is exponential, and it's why it impacts our families even more. So we do see that in the charter world, children who are bused farther, the impacts of things that are felt much bigger than in a traditional district. Simple accidents, you know, our buses have to get out past them and back in, and when they're going around a few miles, it changes really quickly. And so that's why we have those larger windows of time for our kids, because there's a lot that we can't account for. It is something that we always work on, but it, some amount of inconsistency is always going to be expected when you're traveling much farther than traditionally buses do.
Just for clarification, you're talking about, I know that's operational logistics, right? But there's also obviously financial impact to stuff like that, as to that decision to go above and beyond, right? And I want to make sure that that's highlighted as well, and making sure that I'm looking at the right place here on this chart reporting. And that would be on the second page, correct? On the second to bottom,
yeah.
Buses, pupil transportation, 446, spot five.
The piece that, the other flip side to that is that based on our location, 100% of our children are transportation eligible, which means that we receive funding for every student at our school to a certain degree. I don't say that it covers all of the transportation pieces, but to a certain degree, to be able to provide that. So it's the right thing to do. It's never been a question for us of whether or not we were going to do that. We receive funds for kids. We're going to go ahead and do that to make that happen. But those numbers do align in terms of coming in and going out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else on those two documents? Okay. The other update that I wanted to give in terms of a school oversight, an overall school update, is around communications. So just to highlight for the board, I know that we've received some different feedback and done some reflection this summer about making sure that we are always improving communications, and that 5-year mark with a lot of growth, really being reflective and making sure that if there's ways that we can enhance our communication, that we're doing that. So we have reformatted the online calendar, and you should be able to access it by your phone now. I know that sounds crazy, but Google calendars do not align with phones. So we have a new tweak that I think that allows you to see that. And we've added all school activities to the calendar now, where in the past, historically, we only did school-wide events. So now everybody's getting alerted when everything is happening a little bit differently around the feedback that we got. We have also been doing blog posts 2 to 3 times a week in August and September. It will slow down a little bit, but the idea is that we're really pushing blog posts out differently and giving families resources to be able to go back to and find on our website. Our Facebook page has been posting multiple times a day. Teachers and staff and the community has really come around kind of getting information out there via Facebook. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback about what we're putting out right now around that. We are now using a school-wide email system. And again, this sounds crazy, but when we first started, the state system did not allow us to create groups over a certain size. So now we can use our sounds crazy. I know that. So we had to figure out creative ways. So now we're using a different system that allows us to send school-wide communications. So now instead of getting lots of little classroom classroom communications, you're getting them whole school instead. So we're getting everything out at the same time with the same information to everybody. So you're starting to see more of that come from there. Teachers are receiving weekly calendar updates this year. We're working really hard to help them on that. And we are working on an online community, and some information will be coming home about that soon as well. So communication is really enhanced this year, I think, for our families. And we've received some positive feedback on that.
I want to personally commend you and the administration staff on behalf of the board around taking constructive feedback, right, and taking action on it. It's not always the easiest thing to do, but of course we're committed, right, as an organization and obviously as a governance body, our job is to ensure that that is happening. Particularly around the communication component, right? I think it's encouraging to see the several and many steps that you all are taking as an administration around making sure that our families know what's happening, how it's happening, when it's happening, right? Personally, I'm very happy to see the calendar mobile ready. I'll say that. Thank you very much. I'm very excited about that. And then obviously, as I know you're also working, as we've talked about in our July meeting, around the board and obviously email addresses as well. And I know that's an ongoing effort. Of course, we wanted to take care of our families first. So thank you very, very much on behalf of the board and personally for the actions that you're taking. Thank you.
All right, so my other two bulleted items are the board recognition piece, and then I'm going to do a data review. So the board recognition piece. So we have Carla Broadway and Laura Schlate with us tonight. And I will say it is not typical that I think we would recognize staff members who have been with us for just a month, but the impact and the feedback that these two staff members are making is absolutely worth recognizing tonight. So Carla and Laura are our student support specialists. And what that means is that their job description states that they're responsible for proactively and reactively supporting the social and emotional needs of our students by working directly with children, by working with teachers, and by working with families. So really trying to make sure that, you know, we're looking at that whole child, making sure that we've got resources for our teachers, resources for our kids to make sure that we can proactively and reactively approach anything that comes our way. I have heard from students, I have heard from families, I've heard from staff members who have shared how much they appreciate what these two women are doing for us, and so we wanted to share that with the board. In the short time that they've been here with us, they have already enhanced our program by bringing new things to First State Montessori. They have already started new programs in the short time that they've been here, including getting together high school packets for our eighth graders and providing them with information about where some possibilities are. They did the Start with Hello program that you saw unveiled this week. They are running social skills groups. They are teaching lessons to classrooms. They did, I believe the lesson this week was around empathy in one of the classrooms and really talking to the kids about that from a different perspective. They are supporting teachers. They are working with kids. They are flying from building to building. both of them have a ton of experience in counseling backgrounds. I actually wanted to give them a moment to kind of share how they landed here, because I think it's always important to hear people's stories. I don't know if I told you that.
No pressure.
I think it's really important to know what brings new staff members. I know that in the past we've talked about exit interviews and knowing our staff and what's going on with people, but I also think that the flip side is what's drawing people to us or what brings people to us.
Sure.
So I thought it would be fun to hear from them what brought them here and then give you guys a chance to ask any questions or share any comments with them. Okay. Right. One of you want to tell us what brought you here?
Okay. My name is Carla Broadway. And I have been in education 19 years. Next month, it will be 19 years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so in various capacities around student support. I've worked in the Red Clay District and in the Brandywine School District and actually in Charter. I was in Echo Academy for about 8 years. So I've had various experience, district and charter as well, and what brought me to Montessori is I came here first as a parent. My oldest daughter, as I tell people all the time, was a very traditional student. There's a 7-year age gap between my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter. So my oldest daughter was a very traditional education experience. She went through the Brandywine School District, and then my baby was born. And very early on, even before she ended up in elementary school, I was like, I don't know if that's gonna work for this one, coming behind. And we started in, she went to kindergarten and first grade in a traditional public school, and I tell people it really was like putting a round peg in a square hole. It just wouldn't fit. And what I was afraid was she was gonna lose that light. which I could see, even if other people couldn't see that light sometimes. So I started doing my homework as a parent, and I was hearing great things, and someone's like, your baby belongs at First State Montessori, and so I prayed to God every night. And luckily, through my waiting list, I got on a waiting list, and it came up when she was in second grade after she was in school for a week. Our name came up, and I was like, we're here. It was home. And that's how we started. I had the pleasure of having her in Sarah's class my first year here, and it was a life-changing experience for me as a parent, and a life-changing experience for her, and she is still a student in fifth grade here. So that's how I ended up here as a parent. And then as an employee, I've worked in various situations and settings, and I have to be honest, and I have a love for children and a love to help kids to be their full potential and whatever they are, and I want them to know themselves and know light and love education because I love education. And I started seeing that I was working alongside people that didn't have that same goal. And that became very discouraging, to work side by side with people who weren't having that as their goal. And through conversations, even with Courtney, we realized that I really had a lot in common with Montessori, and as prayers would have it, she called, and here I am, and I'm so happy to be here. I love this community, and now I love it from the inside as well.
Welcome, Carla. Thank you.
So I've been in public schools for about 15 years as a school counselor, my fifth career, and this is the one I'm most meant to be. And I started Montessori. My 28-year-old was in private Montessori, and it was great. But they're like, oh, she needs to come back. I'm like, well, where's the money? I had to put her in traditional school, and it worked out really well for her. And then Carla and I have a lot in common about how discouraged we were feeling. And I kind of pounded you the first year. I was like, oh, if you ever need a school counselor, as I said, and again, Carla and I have had these conversations, I really was feeling discouraged. And I wanted to work where there was integrity and about what was meant, what was most important was the child and not test scores and being loaded down with the pressure from a peer who really did not know what was going on down here. And my job definition was changing. My ability to work with children was not really there anymore. So I pounded her once again, and the timing just happened to be right, and I feel so fortunate. And people are like, well, how's it going? I'm like, I'm still saying, pinch me.
Excellent. Welcome. Okay, excellent.
Do you want to open it up and see if anybody had any follow-up questions or any comments that they want to share and recognizing these two amazing
No question for me, but a comment generally. Before I forget, you mentioned the lesson on empathy, right? And was that at the middle school level?
Yeah, I did.
Wonderful. My daughter came home, and empathy is a word we use in the house all the time. Particularly, my oldest has her empathy meter is off the chart. So I'm talking about it in the house all the time. But to hear my little one come home, who's in sixth grade, and give me a talk about empathy and how she learned it in school, and we're having these discussions, she said, on empathy and its importance, I was very, very pleased. So just from a personal standpoint, thank you very, very much. I didn't want to lose that because I heard it brought up. Secondarily, though, from a board chair perspective, we want to obviously welcome you both to the family, to the community, clearly you've had your eye on us, and we always are looking for new talent. We're growing. Thank you. Particularly as well, I know as we talk about, Zeke, you mentioned it during your financial report, the focus on support staff as it pertains, you know, to, help me here, special, thank you, spec ed related and those types of services. So we're seeing those changes on the landscape, right, around spec ed and the attention that is required, et cetera. So not only is obviously just your personalities and your drive and your passion towards education, but your specific skill set that you're bringing to our community is critical at this time. And so thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And I want to say, too, personally, both my girls, love you guys. And in our first meeting with you all for our 504 plans for both girls, both my girls that attend here, both Evie that's sitting here with me and Imani, dealing with some very significant issues. And I loved your energy when I walked in and I met you all and the team, and every day. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw, but I was dealing with Evie out here, and you know, she was taking her deep breaths and drinking her water and calming down and doing all those things, which is something that, you know, I mean, I could cry at it because it definitely is, has made a difference. You guys have made a difference, and I really appreciate you.
Excellent. Good feedback.
Thanks. Well, while we're at it,
yeah.
I had the fantastic opportunity during open house to attend Carla's session on what is available for our students when they have to leave the hallowed halls of FSMA. Your energy in the room, it was the end of the night. They had talked for hours, I'm sure. The energy that you brought to the room, the information that you brought to parents, and the reassurance that you brought to all of us by telling us that our children out in the community are wanted children in a lot of the places where they will venture to, was validating to a lot of the parents that we had made good choices for our children, and that you were going to help us make good choices for them as individuals going forward. So thank you for that evening. And furthermore, one of the things we heard in the expansion many times over and over was make sure that you have vertical integration. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're working to prepare the children so that when they go to other places, they will be successful. And you made it very clear that there are so many places for them to be successful, and that all that surrounds them and the support they get here will help them to be that way. So thank you both. Welcome.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Courtney, anything else from head of school report?
I have my fun data presentation tonight.
Data.
You ready for it?
Yes, I'm excited.
So ready.
Got the energy up for data.
It's fun, man.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to send around two packets. And I will do my best to make them light and fun. You all request the data. I live the data every day. So there's two different ones. There's one that's the overview, and then you're going to get a second one as well. I'll tell you what the two differences are.
We're having some people with them in a little bit of time.
Whiteboard.
So just to kind of lay the foundation, on the front of our data packet, and it lives here every year, we talk about our beliefs around data, and we remind ourselves that while we're going to look at some fancy scores, we also remember that at the end of the day, we are always committed to that whole child development piece, and which we believe is the key to raising test scores the right way. So just a foundational paragraph that roots us again in what we do, but there is a need to review the SBAC data, the Smarter Balanced data, across the board. So I have it laid out in a couple different ways. Again, I'm gonna highlight some of these, and then we can come back to it. I can answer questions, whatever you wanna do. So the first main chart, right, so it's all blue, that what we consider page 3.
just straightforward numbers in all of the grades for ELA and math. At the bottom of each graphing section, I've tried to give you kind of a high-level summary of a takeaway from it. So for this one, what you'll notice in here compared to the state average is that FSMA is above the state average in ELA, but by at least 10% in every grade level. And in math, we've increased the amount of levels that were above the state average. If you flip the page, the green boxes at the top are more of an apples to apples comparison. So the overall data year to year looks different. It's different kids. This green chart at the top gives you our apples to apples kids. So it gives you their current grade and then where they were the past 2 years as well. So if you look at grade 4 in 17-18, that's 68% of our kids passing. Last year, of that exact same cohort of kids, 64% were passing, right? So you can see, again, that trajectory. If you look at grade 5, we've gone from 52% of our kids passing to 76% of the exact same kids over a 2-year span. And each of those in ELA, you see some strong increases over time. And then you see the same apples to apples comparison for math. Math is a little bit different. It does not show the same trajectories, but I also shared with you a different way to look at it and some other kind of background information around that. So if you look at the chart at the bottom of that, you see the FSMA is the blue and green lines are trending up, and actually the state lines over time are trending down. So there's some kind of background information of what the state is doing that we're not, while some of ours are not at the same upward trajectory, you know, there's some dips. You're seeing that across the state as well.
This bottom chart, is that about the holistic numbers on the previous page? Or is this meaning year over year, same student pool?
So that's a year over year.
Okay.
It's the only way I can look at the state data.
Sure.
I can't pull out which kids are new to the state in that one.
Oh, no issues. If you could touch on grades 6 and 7 as well, just the trending there. I see we obviously made significant gains, right, in ELA in those areas from 15-16 to 16-17, but we've seen some slight dips, right? Maybe you can talk to us about maybe what that is attributed to and what our plan is going forward.
Yep, let me keep going.
Okay.
And then I think we're going to answer that a little bit as
excellent.
We go.
Sorry.
It's okay. So if you look at this next one that has the two different line charts, that is the overall scores again of kids meeting or exceeding. Again, not an apples to apples. This is an overall look at those same trends, right? So you're looking at the state increases versus the school increases, kind of the same colors across. If you flip one more page and get that bar graph. So here's another apples to apples, and here's what we can talk about a little bit more too. So here's what you're gonna see, apples to apples again, the kids over time, what that looks like. You'll see that 16-17 year in 6th and 7th grade, you're right, there's a little bit of a jump up in those kids over time. Those cohorts are smaller cohorts for us. So you take one or two kids that go from a barely meeting to meeting or the other way around. It can be, in seventh grade, it's a 5 percentage point per kid because there's 22 kids in that. So you're talking about big jumps for one kid answering something differently or getting lucky on a question. And same for that sixth grade. It's a smaller cohort. So you have one or two kids that can shift and change a little bit. It's not drastic enough to make any severe plans around, and that we're still looking at the overall trends and seeing where those kids are in terms of their jumps over time. So you're looking at kind of that trajectory.
Are we able to zoom in on who those exact children are
through
this? And then obviously a plan for them going forward.
Yep, absolutely. And again, if you look at those seventh graders that have been with us for 4 years, I mean, you're showing kids that are, like I said, growing by 25% of the kids that are passing that. I mean, that's huge increases across the board. Again, you're not talking about that many kids in that, but they are really strong numbers across the board for our kids moving forward. The final page on this one that says FSMA third grade cohort. So this is a total new report that I pulled for you guys to give us some information. This third grade cohort are the kids that started with us in kindergarten and are now third graders. So kids that have been with us for 4 years. What we did is we created a cohort of the kids who have been here for all 4 years and also do not receive special education services. Okay, so we created a cohort of kids that are performing in a more typical range and who have been here for all 4 years to see what that looks like. And then you see the percentages at the bottom of where they are. So in terms of ELA, of that cohort of kids who have been with us for 4 years, 80% of them are meeting the ELA standard. It's huge. And of that, not one of those students received a 1, which is considered well below the standard. So there's a 1, 2, 3, 4 scale. We don't have any kids receiving a 1 that have been here since kindergarten, which is really strong. For math, the number is a little bit lower, but again, kind of the state averages and over the across the state, the numbers are lower in math typically across the board. So the third grade cohort in math, 60% of those kids are meeting or exceeding. And again, there was actually only one student who received a 1, and that, again, really, really high. And then I also noted for you the amount of kids that are receiving 4s, which is that exceeding, way above the standard, right? So those kids that are way above, you're talking about 40% of the third grade cohort is exceeding in ELA and about close to 25% in math, which, you know, it's really strong numbers coming out of where we are. Are we still looking at those discrepancies? Absolutely. We're looking at the difference between ELA and math. We're looking at where it's catching up. We're looking at, you know, what the difference looks like across the board for kids.
So this is consistent with our narrative as we looked at these numbers year over year, right? Which is that the longer children are with us, the better they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Okay. So this packet, like I said, has been created on all of our data. I'm going to shift gears to the other packet that I gave you, which are data tables and information from outside sources. So the first page, those kind of yellow graphs, are the scores of all of the four big four surrounding districts around FSMA, right? So when you think about the four main districts that we pull from, Brandywine, Colonial, Christina, and Red Clay, when you look at those four districts, you can see the scores compared to that. So FSMA's proficiency rates are at the top, and then you can look at where that would be. When you look at it, there's also a summary at the bottom of each of the different district ones. So for instance, at the bottom of the Brandywine School District, you can see that FSMA actually outperformed every school in the Brandywine School District in ELA and all but 4 in math. Colonial, we outperformed every school in the Colonial School District in ELA and math, and it goes on for Christina and Red Clay as well. And then I also have the comparison to all of the charter schools that are within those districts as well.
Okay. And that's the red box.
That's the orange one. Kind of the high-level overview is noted on the front. When I ranked us and looked at all 64 of those schools within the four districts that we pull from, and again, the K-8 elementary and middle schools are in this piece. There are 64 schools. Of all of those schools, FSMA actually ranks 4th in ELA and 16th in math. Again, the top, you're still talking about the top 25 percentile across the four main districts that we pull from. The next page is actually directly from one of the state reports where it gives you the charters over the past 3 years, similar to one that I presented in our data summary, but you can see what they're showing for the charters across the board. And I think what's interesting, especially in math, you see some that are trailing off, some that are falling down, some that are stable. But for the most part, FSMA is showing a really strong gains across the whole cohort. I'm not just looking at one specific grade, but as a whole school. Our bar is pretty steady. It is actually one of only a few that are pretty steadily increasing over time in that same way. And on the backside of that is the ELA representation as well, where again, you're going to see that we are one of the only ones that show a consistent 3-year growth. So those are there for you too. I also then on the next two pages cited two outside sources that provided information around SBAC data. The first being an article from Delaware Online that ranked the top 7 charter schools. And I gave you the link for that. We fall in terms of all of the charter schools as 5th and 6th in terms of ELA and math. That's comparing us to high schools as well though, which is a little bit of an interesting comparison to do.
So,
it's there. When you pull out just K-8 schools, it looks a little bit different. So we can talk about that. And then the last piece is an article that was from WHYY that they did an article around, it was actually around the state test scores staying really stagnant and plateauing this year. And they did note that there were 2 charter schools that had actual increases in both ELA and math, and one of them was First State Montessori. So that's highlighted in here as well as showing one of the only schools that had increases in both subject areas. So again, I tried to kind of give you all the different pieces that allow you guys to see the different parts and straightforward numbers and graphs to help that. I know it's a lot to digest. So it will be fun reading in the next few days for y'all, wherever you are, but I'm happy to answer any questions that have come up as I've been chatting away about making data fun, right, Janine?
I love data. I love charts. I like them better in charts than in
I try.
I like pictures.
And I gave you some outside sources, because I know
I'm going to do
outside sources.
I do. I like citations.
Yeah.
I want to take a moment, Courtney, just to commend you and the academic team. Liz, please acknowledge her on our board's behalf. I know this is no easy task, and I'll talk about this in a moment, but, you know, we have taken on unprecedented growth in the last few years. And let it be no mistake, right? Our number one charge is to educate children. That's our number one responsibility as an institution. Yes, we are a state school as well, so it's very important that we follow those guidelines of what to do. But obviously our charter is about how we do it as well, and that's through Montessori education, right, and the pedagogy such as it is. So I say that just for contextual reference, that as we look at these scores, let's keep that in mind, right? As a board, when we tell our story, whether it be development or just in our individual interactions, you know, let's be really clear that we are a unique institution that has a unique structure and we have a unique mission. And that in and of itself presents a whole unique set of challenges that you lead and we support. And so these scores, I think back to maybe two school years ago, where we were having discussions around these scores, right? And what are we going to do to get them better? And that narrative about, let's see where our cohorts of children are as they stay with us year over year. And this is in support of that narrative, which is why I don't want it to be lost as we look at charts and data and so on and so forth, right? I think it's important that we circle back to that conversation from two school years ago that we had here in this room, and take the moment to commend you and the academic team on delivering on that. There's work still to do, obviously, clearly, not just here, across the state in education, but clearly that work is being done. Things are getting done, and you've given us the resources to go out and have those conversations that we need to have, and now it's on us to make sure that we're telling that story in the best way we can. All right, thank you.
I will receive that thanks, but I'm going to tell you it's because there are amazing teachers
no question.
In these classrooms. Mm-hmm. There are amazing people in the rooms actually doing this.
Yes.
Right? So we can lead them towards it,
yeah.
But they're the ones every day that do it, and it is an incredible team that are making that happen. That starts with the people in the classrooms, which one of them is sitting at the table with us. So
right.
Thank you on behalf of
the
I just want to say, I want to second Dwayne's commendations and thanks to you and the whole and all the teachers, because I was one of those board members who was, you know, raising questions, and I think what you said earlier, we don't want to be teaching to the test. It's not about tests. It's not who we are.
That's right.
That said, it's also naive to think that these things don't matter in so many different ways for the child himself or herself. So I applaud sort of the balance you've been able to strike and the progress you've been able to achieve.
Cheers.
And if I could just add to that, I think one of the things that we saw for those of us who have been here since the beginning is foundationally, the commitment to excellence in the classroom was the first commitment to making sure that the children that were here had all the resources that they needed to be met where they were in their education to become the whole people that we hope for. We have had exponential growth, and none of that excellence has lost. The data proves it. The data shows it, and we see our kids growing every day, not only as students, but as empathetic individuals contributing to the community. And so beyond the thanks that we all offer, the commitment to the foundation of what we are is very, very appreciated.
Thank you, Angela, for coming back on that, right? Because that was also the secondary point, right, that from that discussion 2 years ago, which is as we grow, no drop-off, right? That was also a big part of the discussion, right? And so I appreciate you bringing that, coming back to that point, because it keeps us all honest, mm-hmm. right? And it keeps us all on target to the charge. So cheers to you. Thank you very much. And the team, thank you. Anything else, Courtney, at all from the head of school report, or shall we move on? You're good? Anybody have any other questions, comments, or concerns from the board before we move on to the final bullet point?
I just wanted to also thank you for in terms of diversity, and I know we talked about it to some extent in the last meeting, but my daughter Imani, I think she has a kind of a pen pal thing going on with Goomba Academy, which is amazing. She comes home and she talks about, that's why she said Goomba, because it's like, I want to go, I'm like, no, you're not going to Goomba. This has a pen pal relationship. So that's great. And also Girls Inc. down the street, they're now, it's actually a free after school program that's right down, like literally on Walnut Street down the street. And they walk now to come get the girls after school, and quite a few other students from FSMA are now going down there as well. And so thank you for really digging into that. I appreciate it.
We have a couple staff members who have who are exploring kind of the idea of creating some kind of diversity committee right now to see how we can expand that as well. So there's some definitely ground-level conversations happening. Again, you guys are heard, and we're looking at how we do that.
Thank you. I noticed and I appreciate it.
These are all good things, right? And this is all actually a great segue to the final bullet point here. So I'll be as brief as I possibly can on such a very important topic. So at the outset, I welcomed everyone back to a new school year, right? So and summer's over, if we haven't been able to tell already by the weather and the temperature. But as we've come back, and forgive me if you see me look down, because I, you know, with the topic at hand, I thought it important to just try to jot down some notes that I didn't want to lose sight of the things that I wanted to touch base on this evening. So we're embarking obviously on another school year. My first is board chair, my third year on the board that I've had the pleasure of working with such dedicated people in a phenomenal, phenomenal institution. And I want to take a moment with you all as a body and anyone listening at a later date and those who are here with us tonight to address just how special this particular year really is. This being obviously our fifth year of operation. It's a milestone for us as a body, and obviously as a school and our families. It is a milestone for us. Very encouraged to hear about families who are having success and experiencing success at home and here in the institution. Over the last 2 years in particular, right, First State Montessori Academy has embarked on what is nothing short of unprecedented growth, for especially for a new school and a new school of our size. And our size at that particular time. So as expected with any growth, right, there will be there, as I like to call it, winds of change. They blow seemingly indiscriminate and simultaneous at the same, you know, at the same running at the same time. And with any change of winds of change, they seem to blow both leeward, wayward, in any which way at any given time. As leaders of this institution, right, it's our duty, nevertheless, to assist in the mission of charting and navigating our way through those winds of change, right? Forward, in spite of any headwinds that we might face as a body, as an institution, as a school. And if you are not aware, every so often those headwinds get a little stronger, and sometimes they're a little lighter, right? In this particular moment in time, I think our institution may be facing, as we grow, which is not uncommon, some particular headwinds, right? We've seen them, we're talking about them in finance and fundraising. We're also talking about them, though, as our body grows. We looked at this chart. We're growing up to over 600 students. That means there'll be more families. There'll be more personalities. There'll be more genders. We need to acknowledge that. And we need to find a way, a creative way, a consistent way, to make sure that we bring these folks into the fold. This bedrock foundation that we've been able to establish at the work of many the hard work of many individuals, some who are no longer here now, right? And we're reaping the benefits as a family and as a body of that work as well. But we have to find a way, an inclusive, consistent way as best possible to bring them into the fold and make them feel a part of one of our larger one community and family. I think it's safe to say that without question, we're at a very critical time here in this fifth year, an important juncture in which there's a transitional trajectory happening. Yeah, transitional trajectory of this organization and the school as we grow and bring on new families at a rapid pace, right? And sometimes, as many of you are obviously in business, and you know that as businesses grow, sometimes that growth internally is the biggest challenge. It's not necessarily the product. It's not necessarily the delivery and execution. It's managing the growth itself that can present the biggest challenge. So as such, and with much reflection over the last month or two, if not more, I find myself moved to come talk to everyone here and those who may be listening later. And I'm moved about what I've just expressed to you, but in recollection, I found myself moved to, you know, drawn to a publication, trying to find a base for us to go forward on, a message, right? As we start this new school year, this very, very important school year. As you, many of you probably know me already, I try to find my base and my foundation in doing the right thing for the right reasons, right? And I often go back to inspirations and mentors. I found myself going to the fourth published book by the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And that book is entitled, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community? chaos or community? Where do we go from here? I have that book in my home, in my library. I've read it a few times, and I kept coming back to that word community, community, community. We've used it here several times. We've used it in other committee discussions, right? About one community. And Dr. King, just to give you some context about this book, if you don't know, and I'll be brief on this topic here. But it was written in 1967, a year before his assassination. He went into self-exile in the island of Jamaica to think about the civil rights movement and the next phase of the civil rights movement, right? So the first phase being that of equal rights and protections under the law, et cetera. We all know the story. The second, however, was a larger theme, a much more higher level, right? Not targeted. And it was about people, civility, equality, capital, larger ideas, changes in society that weren't necessarily just targeted towards equal protections under the law for African Americans. So transition, right? How do we transition from this first phase of the civil rights movement to the second? Where do we go from here? Chaos or community? Hence the title of the book. And as I was going back to the book, I found parallels, not just in the title, but in the mission, the transition itself, right? We're going through this transition, and where do we go from here, and how do we get there? What's going to be the message and how we get to where we're going? And are we going to go towards chaos or community is the question, right? And how do we choose strategically to get there as a point of information? And again, I mention this because change, contextually, the civil rights movement at that time was going through a significant period of change in 1967. We're going through a period of change and transition, if you will, and growth. There was resistance, of which we experience ourselves, right? I want to pause on that second part of the book very quickly, and I'll wrap up here. Chaos or community? I think it's important to stay there for a moment and really define those words, right? So a brief search will tell you chaos is disorganization, turmoil, disruption, a state of disorder. Community, kind of a multi-pronged definition here, either a singular group of people living, existing in the same place and having a particular characteristic in common, a sense of feeling or fellowship with others based on common interests, attitudes, and goals. Where do we go from here is the question. And how do we get there? So here's the individual charge that I have, and I want to leave you all with that all as a backdrop. And this is an individual charge for everyone here tonight. It's for me. It's for anyone listening, right? Where do we go from here? In our quiet moments at home, some more quiet than others, depending on the night of the week. but in our private time, right, we have to ask ourselves, as we say in our fraternity, of which Dr. King was one of my members as well, we have to take an honest inventory of ourselves. Our own actions, our own thoughts, our own words and deeds. And are we, those thoughts and actions and words and deeds, what direction are they moving? It's easy to say that we're in support of something, but our support is designed and derived from that which we think and do. So the question is are those thoughts, actions, words, etc., aligned with moving towards chaos or moving towards community? By definition, are they disruptive? Are they inclusive? Are they patient? Are they kind? Are they a part of what we're doing here at First State Montessori Academy, rooted deeply in that of Maria Montessori's principles, right? We talk about cooperation and inclusion and fairness, peace and kindness. as we move forward with one another. Now, I want to be really clear, right? That does not mean disagreement is absent, right? In fact, you've all heard me probably say I'm a huge proponent of constructive criticism and productive disagreement, right? Because we have to work. That brings out the best solution I've found in business and in personal relationships. But it's very important. Some people think, you know, community, particularly Montessori community, they think everyone has to agree. Where'd they get that from? No, we don't. But we do need to remember the direction in which we're moving. We do need to remember that, and we need to hold each other accountable, and we need to hold others accountable as we go out and talk about what First State Montessori and remind people about what First State Montessori's community is all about. I thank you all for your time and hearing me out in the last 7 or so minutes as I express some thoughts that have been sitting on me for some time. We have a wonderful community here. We have academics that are improving, that are exceeding the state average. We have families who are seeking us out in the hundreds. We have teachers and administrators that are dedicated to what they are doing. And we have a board that is competent, committed, and complete.
And that is unique.
Yes, we are, and diversified as well. So we have all the tools that we need. The question is, where do we go from here? I appreciate your time, energy, and your talents tonight. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything that I may have raised, please feel free. Being none, may I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Janine Solomon, and second, Aubrey and Nance Phillips. Thank you for all coming out. Have a great evening. We'll see you next month.